killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 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 and welcome back to Decoding the Crimeverse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with...
Glory.
That's correct. And today we've got another serial killer for you. I feel like we're on a roll. But first, I want to ask your opinion on something. So I don't know if you remember when we did the Gypsy Rose case. Do you remember that name?
Gypsy Rose. The name sounds familiar. What did she do?
Remember, her mom would, like, make
okay,
her
I remember,
than
yes.
what she was. And then I think the boyfriend killed... Yes, the boyfriend killed the mom. And then she just recently got out of prison.
She dumped her boyfriend. Didn't you say she broke up with her boyfriend?
Yeah, she dumped the boyfriend who killed the mom.
Yeah.
And then got married outside of prison, right? Now, so it's a whole big scandal. Because the man she married, she's just divorced. Okay.
Okay.
And then she got together with another guy, and now she's announced that she's pregnant. And people are starting to accuse her of, like, she's using this fame, this publicity for her own benefit. Like, for example, she created a baby registry. So basically, she went on and made a list of what people could buy her, and it was sold out within 30 minutes. And people are like, she's not poor. She has money from all this coverage she's been getting.
Yeah.
She's got a, like, literally there's a TV show currently being made. Well, it's being released. It's called Life After Lockup. And people are kind of like saying she's not the innocent victim that she's pretending to be. She's like, and apparently there's another lady on TikTok who also suffered from this, where her mom had Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And Gypsy, in interviews, has literally word for word used some of these stories that the girl has told. So a whole bunch of people are really angry with her. Then you got people who, like, love her. I'm kind of seeing, like, through her. I feel like she is... I mean, at the end of the day, she killed her mom. She's not a... She was a victim, but she is not innocent, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean... If she really wanted to get away from her mom, she could have really run away. She really did not have to kill her mother. And she used someone else to do it. And so, yeah, I think it's a very interesting... I'm excited to see what's going to happen in the future, where this is going to go. I mean, maybe because she's had free plastic surgery. She's all over the news. She's been going to premieres and stuff. She is living the life. And for example, people are saying, like, she's lying. Like, there's a video of her on the beach, and she's saying, oh my goodness, this is my first time on the beach. But then people found a video of her from way back when she was a kid, and she's on the beach. So people are, like, I think starting to, like, see through her facade and her act that she is portraying. But that is enough about Gypsy Rose. We will be updating you because I am, like, currently obsessed with the story. I follow it everywhere. But we are doing the Happy Face Killer, also known as Keith Hunter Jesperson. I think that's how you say it. And he was known for brutally murdering 8 women between 1990 and 1995, just before you were born, sir.
Wow.
So, Keith was born on April 6th, 1955 in British Columbia, Canada. Keith was a middle child with an older sister and a brother and a younger sister and brother. His father often punished Keith by hitting him with a leather belt. Now, I won't lie. I feel like this was put in here to make it seem like, oh my word, that's so bad. But my brother was also hit with a belt. I feel like that's normal. Did you get hit by a belt when you're a kid?
Yes.
Exactly. I don't know. Because you know when they, like, put pieces of information in you, it's kind of to be like, oh my goodness, this was his horrible background. But I feel like that's, like, not that horrid. I feel like all kids get hit. I got hit with the spoon, the wooden spoon. But Keith grew up in Chilliwack, Canada, before moving to Selah, Washington with his family when he was 12. At school, Keith was bigger than his classmates and often bullied and called names such as Monster Man and Igor, which I actually don't know what that means. But as a child, he was cruel to animals. He killed cats and snakes, and under the guise of hunting, often inflicted pain on creatures like deer, rabbits, and coyotes. So a common characteristic we see in serial killers and psychopaths is that they are abusive towards animals as a child. So the pattern holds with Mr. Keith. So Keith's victim, his first victim, was 23-year-old Tanya Bennett, who was killed on January 21st, 1990. He met the disabled Bennett while out drinking and convinced her to go to his house. There he assaulted her, beat her, and strangled her. And she's disabled. Like, come on, my guy. What are you doing? In the summer of 1992, Keith met Claudia at a truck checkpoint in California. Her body, which had been strangled and tied up with duct tape, was found on August 30th, 1992, and her identity remains unknown, but they just call her Claudia as the victim. Keith murdered another woman in August 1992 at a Torlock, California truck stop. This victim was identified as Cynthia Lynn Rose. However, Keith later said he actually killed another woman and did not recognize Cynthia's photo. In November 1992, Keith had an encounter with a prostitute, Lori Ann Pentland, at a truck stop, and he strangled her and left her corpse in Oregon. Remains found in California on June 3rd, 1993 belonged to Keith's next victim, and she was called Cindy. They met at a truck stop in California, and her real name remains a mystery. Yeah. In September 1994, the body of a woman was found in Florida. Her actual identity is unknown, but Susanna, which Keith has stated may have been her name, was confirmed to be one of his victims because he knew about the tie wraps around her throat. Soon after, Angela Subreese ran into Keith at a bar in Washington in January 1995. She traveled east with him in his truck. He has said he strangled her because she wouldn't let him sleep. After the murder, Keith remembered they'd spent days together and he'd let her use a credit card. He decided to drag her body underneath his truck to make sure she wasn't identified. That's really harsh. He left her remains in Nebraska, though she was likely killed in Wyoming. Keith's last victim was Julie Wingham, who'd been his girlfriend. She was killed in Washington State on March 10, 1995, and her body was discovered the next day. Keith has said he took 116 lives, well, but only the 8 above murders have been confirmed to be his. In April 1990, he sexually assaulted a woman who managed to escape, and according to Keith, after he killed his fifth victim in 1993, he managed to stave off murderous urges for more than a year by committing arson while on the road as a trucker. So clearly he's trying to, like, it's basically a drug for him, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, there's a, and I've often heard this when, like, serial killers have, like, that urge to kill. It's like you need your next fix. So clearly,
so would you say, just like how, like, as people in general, how we enjoy the feeling of, like, dopamine, like, running,
yes,
through,
I
us,
feel like, well,
so I, do you think it gives them the same kind of excitement?
Yes, because I know that people, like, I know,
or maybe it's just a, how do I say it, unquenched thirst that they keep trying to.
Okay, coming from a Christian perspective, we know any type of sin can become addicting.
Yeah.
Okay, and I feel like murder is not any different. Because I know often they do say there can be, like, an adrenaline rush. I mean, it's, you feel like you have power. You've just killed someone. That, like, I would think creates a sense of, oh my goodness, I can play like God in a sense. I have power. That would give a rush. I know sometimes there's also, like, a lot of the more, like, weird ones. There's, like, the sexual pleasure that comes. So I feel like there is some sort of, like, something that they're addicted to, that the act of killing,
yeah,
is, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Satisfies, that's the word. It satisfies that urge. And obviously, arson, again, it gets that sense of power. Look, I can destroy this building. Look how much power I have. I feel like that would be, like, what he's craving, that sense of, like, oh my goodness, look at what I can do.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Because both are very destructive methods of crime.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he didn't sexually assault any of his victims. So I would feel that was that wasn't then the need that he was looking for. It was more something else. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you.
But then I feel like it is an addiction. I feel like there definitely is an addiction when it comes to serial killers. It's like they need that next fix, which is quite scary if you think about it.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. I mean, you can get addicted to anything. I mean, just, you can get addicted to Coca-Cola. I mean, it's actually just, it's ridiculous. So, yeah. So following the discovery of Bennett's body, so that was his first victim in January 1990, Laverne Pavlinak, I think that's how you say it, Laverne Pavlinak, lied to the police that she'd aided her boyfriend, John Soz... These are all Canadian names. They're very strange. John Soznovska in committing the crime. I don't even know if that's Canadian. That actually sounds more Russian. I won't lie. Pavlinak made this false statement because she wanted to escape her abusive relationship with John. She later resided her confession, but in 1991, a jury still found her guilty, and John pleaded guilty to avoid the death penalty. These convictions meant Keith was unlikely to ever face charges for his crime. However, a part of him wanted to claim credit. So he wrote, wow, about murdering Bennett in a bus bathroom. Like the terminal, the bus stops. The message was signed... Oh, with a smiley face. Oh, I see now. He would go on to share details of the crime on another restroom wall. In later years, Keith also sent anonymous letters to a newspaper about what had become of his multiple murders. Smiley faces again served as a signature, prompting it to become the Happy Face Killer. I understand now. Yeah. You know, when I read the name, I was like, did he just like have a weird smile?
Yeah, or it, you know what I'm could saying? Have, it could have maybe just meant that he was very happy, you know, killing people.
Yeah, but okay. I don't know if... Can they even... I don't know. If you've killed that many people, do you even know what happiness is? I feel like killing someone... take something out of your soul. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but again,
because I mean,
in the context of the situation, like what we spoke, how like the addiction forms. Okay. So that's what quote unquote would make them happy.
I know it takes something out of your soul, and the reason I know it takes something out of your soul is now listen to this horrendous fact. In Germany, when it was World War II, the Nazis. Every morning, the Nazi soldiers would be served their breakfast with pills. Right now, obviously, vitamins, you would think, like, you know, yeah. Vitamin C, magnesium, like, all the things you need. No, they were drugs to make them more susceptible so they didn't feel the guilt when they were instructed to kill people. I mean, that's ridiculous. And even at the concentration camps, because the first method of killing at concentration camps was to line them up at a wall and shoot them. But it became too taxing on the shooters. That's when they came up with the other solutions like the gas chambers.
Yeah.
So killing definitely takes something out of you.
It so, does.
Yeah. To then name him Happy Face Killer, I was kind of like, what's this? But the smiley faces make sense.
Yeah. It's like a little present at the end.
I don't know if that, you could say call cheese. That a threat. No, Gloria, you can't call it. Who's being killed? No, guys, I draw smiley faces everywhere. You can ask Glory everywhere. Often he'll be sitting and I'll just take his hand and I'll draw a smiley face on it randomly. I'm obsessed. I'm just saying. He's looking at me side eyeing. He knows it's true. I draw them everywhere. Do I not?
Yeah, I do.
So what's the problem? Tell the whole world why you have a problem.
That is not what we're discussing right now. Thank you.
Anyway, after Keith was in custody, he provided the location of Bennett's purse, which only the killer would know, obviously, because actually authorities had believed they had convicted the wrong person. But now that they had the evidence that it was Keith, they could release the Pavlinak and John, who obviously had confessed to the murders earlier on. So they were then released from prison. Now that Keith was able to give the location of the purse. Keith became a suspect after Winningham's was found, since he was known to be her boyfriend. Keith attempted suicide but ended up confessing to Winningham's murder. Before his arrest, he also wrote a letter to his brother and admitted, "I'm so sorry I turned out this way. I have been a killer for 5 years and killed 8 people." His brother gave his letter to law enforcement. So I suppose there is some sense of guilt, because it must eat at you. I mean, imagine coming home and you have blood on your hands and I can't even imagine. While in custody, Keith shared details of his 8 murders, and he received multiple life sentences for several of the crimes, but was spared the death penalty. He resides currently in the Oregon State Penitentiary, where he spends his time making art. Apparently, you can buy this art. I didn't know you could buy prison art. I feel like that's a little bit weird. Do you get me? That's
yeah.
Weird. Like buying a painting, and it's in your house, and a killer painted it. I feel like that's just like bad mojo in the house. No, I'm kidding. Although I wouldn't be, what is it? Imagine art.prison.com. Where would you even buy that? That'd be weird.
Yeah.
Although I do know they have like lots of recreational activities in prison, because obviously one of the aims of prison is to actually rehabilitate people into society. So I suppose, I know that like, there's school, especially like in the juvenile centers.
Yeah.
I've been so fascinated with prisons on the show recently. I feel like we always end up speaking about prisons. I would love to go to Alcatraz.
You'd love to go to prison?
No, it's not open anymore.
I'm just checking.
Wow. No, I'd love to see it. I mean, imagine, that's where Al Capone was. I mean, that's so cool. I'd love to go there, and I'd love to go to Robben Island as well, yeah, where Nelson Mandela was. Because they're now just museums, you see, so there's no one there.
Yeah.
I won't lie. I've been to a prison before, but it's was a prison, like, long ago, like,
yeah,
apartheid-era prisons. It's in town.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. And then they made us go in the prison cells. It was very scary. Because when they close the door, we can't see anything. I promise you, Gloria, it's the worst experience. So, imagine like a toilet stall, maybe, yeah, a little bit bigger than a toilet stall. That is it. No bed, nothing. Okay. And then what they would do, there was 2 doors. Okay. So this was not I don't think these were the prison cells. I think these were like, you know, the punishment prison cells when people have like misbehaved.
Yeah.
What's it called? Solitary confinement, that thing. Yeah. No bed, nothing. It was literally, they didn't have floor. I promise you, Glory, they were literally holes carved into a rock. Okay, so you were sitting on cold rock walls, everything. And basically, there were 2 doors. There was a door that when it got closed, you couldn't see anything. And then there was a gate. So what they would do sometimes is they would open the doors. And to punish the prisoners in winter, they would take hose pipes with freezing cold water and then spray them through the gates.
What?
I know. That's crazy. Imagine. No, I can't. I mean, That's a little bit bordering on cruelty.
Yeah.
Like, I understand people must be punished, but that's, like, a bit extreme.
Extreme. You think so?
I do think so. Because there was also, let me tell you this. It was, I can even remember this. Like, I can picture the place in my brain. And I went there in, like, grade 8. At the top of the hill, they had the toilets. But obviously, they weren't like the lovely flushing toilets we have today, okay? They were holes in the ground.
Mm.
And what would happen was, I think, I don't know if it was when it rained or whatever. I can't remember details like completely correctly. The everything would run down the hill, right? But at the bottom of the hill was the dining area.
Yeah.
So, now imagine you go and eat and all the stuff is just sitting there. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
That is really disgusting. Blech. Yeah, prisons are a lot, guys. I do feel like sometimes, I know there's so many stories of like prison guards taking advantage of their power and authority, but it's quite sad. But I would love to know like the insides and outside. Like, Gypsy Rose was speaking about this drink they make in prison, where it's instant coffee, you crush up sweets, and I think it was like them like cold drink, and you mix it together and it became like an energy drink, and apparently all the prisoners used to drink it. Wow. And they would call it a rack. I feel like the stuff is so interesting. I feel like there's a whole life inside prison that we have no cooking clue about. That's like so crazy. Anyway, that's enough about prisons. I've clearly got a fascination at current moment, but it's okay. It's my current obsession. But we really hope you enjoyed the show. Otherwise, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, nothing else.
Nothing else?
Yeah.
Nothing else?
Just another day, another murder.
Well, 8 murders in this case.
8 murders.
8 murders. Otherwise, we really hope you have a good week. Otherwise, we will see you same time, same place next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.